Hi, good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm good. What's new and exciting, my love?
Let's see. I just got back from a wonderful weekend. Of course. Wonderful hotel sex all weekend long. So quite wonderful. I'm very glad. Very happy.
Oh, honey. This is such great news. All you do is vacation and have sex. This is like ridiculous.
It's glamorous. I know. I feel like every woman should be enjoying this.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. So I want to welcome our wonderful listeners, our dirty listeners. Oh. We have to introduce ourselves. I'm Dr. Limor Blockman. Hi.
Hi. I'm Luann Hernandez. Thank you for listening to us tonight.
Thank you for listening. This is Sexindipity. And our wonderful dirty listeners, we're hoping that you're undressed. And if you're not, please disrobe this fucking instant because you're desecrating our debauched, sacred ground here.
Right. Well, perhaps we can help you with that a little bit later on tonight.
Yes. You'll have to reciprocate. So what are we talking about tonight?
I think what we're talking about are fantasies. What's your fantasy? What do men fantasize about? What do women fantasize about?
And especially in this voice.
We should use this voice the entire time.
I know, through the entire show. It's getting hard. It's getting hard already to maintain.
That's what he said.
I know. I'm sure you helped. So fantasies. So what do you think? What do you think?
What do I think about my fantasies?
Yeah, fantasies. Let's start with yours.
Mine are filthy and awful.
That's
but
terrific.
I love it.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Please.
Well, it's crazy because I giggle because I'm like, oh, I spend a lot of my day fantasizing.
Yeah, that's terrific. Yeah. I mean,
as you should. Yeah. There's the sweet little wouldn't it be nice to try this thing out with Brett and whatever. Just sweet ones, having sex in different areas,
locations.
So that's the thing. I realized the thing I really enjoy is having sex when I'm not supposed to.
Sneaking into it, that's what you mean? Grabbing an hour in between?
Yeah,
stuff like that?
Yeah, stuff like that. Like, if there's a party going on downstairs, I'm like, hey.
Hey.
Oh, I need help with something upstairs. Hold on. Can you help me?
That's a fantasy, or you're acting out?
Actually, I act those ones out.
Okay.
The ones that I would not act out usually involve multiple partners and yes.
And we'll get to why you wouldn't.
It's messy and it's complicated and there's
too much cleanup,
and then there's all of these people around and. You're just not focusing on your own pleasure as much as you'd like to. once there's more than one organ around, it's I'm not enjoying myself because I'm there's too much stimulus.
There's too much going on. You don't know what to do. But the thing is, really, they can be of service. The more the merrier. But
yes.
We'll get to it. Let me just start and say that one of my favorite writers was Nora Ephron. And I loved her. And I think she was brilliant. And one of my favorite quotes from her was, "In my sex fantasy, nobody ever loves me for my mind."
Yes, that's true. Everyone's just so overwhelmed with desire for my body.
basically what she depicted in this quote is really something that women really can relate to very well. I'm not going to start with quoting other professionals yet, but in general, the main thing that women crave is to be desired, to be looked at as irresistible, to be, that's almost half of the orgasm itself, to be just looked, to be coveted, to be adored, to be desired. And that shows itself in many, empirical studies and also just random questionnaires with women as to what their fantasy is. Let me start and say that Aristo actually kind of founded the whole idea of fantasy when he said, and I want to quote what he said. He said that both sexes could be incited beyond any immediate need for sexual intercourse, induced by the memory of past pleasure. And so, you know, regardless of something that is right before you, imagination is what works for you as a trigger to your desire. And he actually didn't call it fantasy, but that's what he was referring to, which is fascinating. And, you know,
look at it and put it in the spank bank.
I know. Well, the spank bank back then in antiquity, it was kind of a problem. But yeah, so he actually, you know, kind of realized that there was something going on there, that people are getting aroused without any reason obvious to the eye.
Like, I don't understand. I don't, why you have an erection right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on, you know. And it's like, I want to ask you, as someone that knows men, what do you think the male the top male fantasy would be?
Ooh. I'm very curious about what this one is. Getting a little excited over here.
I know.
The top male fantasy.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. Is it the, I read something about like teacher-student type of thing, like submissive dominant type of relationship.
Well, yeah, there are a bunch of themes and stuff. Yeah. But there are a few factors, and it's so ridiculous because to me, you know, when I'm like really going to line up what they supposedly fantasize about, it's so obvious that it's a fantasy. No man can ever deal with all these things. You
know,
it's
the like, threesomes? And the-
well, we'll get to the threesomes, but it's funny that a lot of them were like explaining as to, and I'll get to the whole idea of the ideal woman and whatever that entails.
I'm not free.
I'm busy tonight.
I'm busy tonight.
But honestly, so it was like the so cliche in a manner that you really want to really line up, and you cannot deal with a woman like that. Forget it. Go home and masturbate. So, you know, in general, it would be someone that, of course, looks like
a model.
The male fantasy. Well, not necessarily a model, but someone that really represents, of course, that's a cultural thing and whatever, but someone that commands dirty talk, first of all. I mean, that's a crucial thing. She should know how to talk to me and how to incite me and, you know, the whole idea. And, you know, of course, she needs to rock garters and lingerie and look great in all this, you know, whatever like, ridiculous
thing. All continue.
Yeah, please, check.
I know, I'm like, done.
Of course, you know, master the performance of pole dancing or anything that has to do with that. And, you know, bake a cake wearing nothing but her sexy apron.
Yep.
And that's what you want.
I was like, I haven't heard anything yet.
I know that I cannot.
But I haven't
it's
done.
It's all in me.
Done.
Yeah.
Naked cake. Probably
naked
not the
cake?
Most sanitary.
I know, with your little apron. It's really like, yeah, so, you know, that's kind of, you know, oh, that's what you want, liar. You can't deal with that.
I know. Lies.
I know.
You tell me lies.
So, yeah, so that was like one of the things that many men kind of,
well,
you know,
all focusing on the visual.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, well, it's pretty obvious that men are very visual, you know. And
no.
But I cannot say that women are not, that's a complete myth, and we'll get to it. But I want to start with something that was a big phenomenon in that started in the 80s. And that's something that everybody was introduced to, which is phone sex. That's a big, big side of fantasy. And oh. I want to really hear, what do you think? I mean, it's still, of course, a big, big factory. Some would say that it makes close to 50 million, statewide.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, like, the brain is the biggest sex organ, as we know.
Well, so, the skin is, but
yes,
close.
That's true.
Yeah.
Skin. Okay. Second biggest.
Second biggest. Yes.
It's the brain, and it's, you know, it's exciting and arousing, and when I introduced Brett to that, he was like, oh.
How did you introduce him to that?
I just started talking dirty. Well, I just started.
Okay, yeah.
When he was away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just like, hey.
So what do you think? I mean, what do you think is so arousing about phone sex?
Well, the idea that the person that's on the other side of the line is aroused also.
Well, you think that the person that gives the phone sex is aroused?
I think that's the fantasy.
That's, okay, so yeah, I want to hear what you think. Yeah. I mean, analyze.
It's the psychology that the other person on the other line is telling you all these things that they want to do to you, and you can imagine it, and they start, you know, you start making the, that feels so good. I like it when you touch me there. Stuff like that. You know, you start doing...
Are you moonlighting?
Am I moonlighting? I mean...
You can, come on, come clear.
I mean... You
just
know.
Say, okay.
I don't do it for pay.
That's a shame. Okay, so yeah, so...
Yeah, so the fantasy...
The idea that I'm supposedly interested in what you really have to tell me?
And you don't have to worry about their face, like, oh my God, like, ew, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about that. Them saying, like, yeah, like, I really want to put my dick in between your tits or something like that. You're like, oh... You know, so, like, you
let's
don't have to
talk about it. Yeah, let's, I don't know.
You don't have to worry about it's the same. It's the same type of thing as like a person would get with a prostitute.
Right, but that's a visual side. What I'm questioning is what is so. Let's just start and say that the main audience is obviously male.
Yes.
I mean, there are hardly any women using phone sex.
Yes.
So what is so enticing about it?
They can envision the person on the other line to be whatever they want them to be.
Right.
However they want them to look.
Mm-hmm. So that's the exciting part.
I think that's part of it.
What else? Is there anything that has to do? Because we said that men are visual.
Yes.
And then that kind of excludes anything visual. I mean, you have your imagination.
Yes. But this is also, you know, it's very sensual to hear someone's voice telling you things.
Right.
That they want to do to you and how that makes you feel.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm getting so
I'm getting
hot.
It's a little exciting tonight,
yeah,
huh?
I know. It's like, so honestly, these 900 numbers, they call them the fantasy lines. I don't know if they use, I think they're not using the 900 numbers anymore because you can't call them from cell phones. So they kind of changed the whole system. Yeah, it became like a problem, and they changed it. But there were a bunch of feminist groups that were opposed to the whole idea of phone sex, which I don't really agree with. But there was something in Bernard College in 82 that it was relating to the whole thing as the pleasure danger controversy. Which is, on one hand, you know, providing a service. On the other hand, it could be maybe degrading to women or maybe putting them in danger. Maybe someone will stalk them or whatever. I don't really think it's a problem and you're selling a product. But what I find intriguing about this whole phone sex thing is that, and I'll read you from their manual. It was really a fascinating research that I did on this. And... the whole thing was based on the male perception of the ideal woman. As if it's like something so universal that there's an ideal woman. What the fuck is the ideal woman? I want to understand.
I mean, we're right here. I don't...
I know. We're free. Call us. No, but seriously, it's like the idea of the ideal woman is pathetic to me because there's no such thing.
There's no such thing.
But you are still selling a fantasy of that. And then the manual, actually for the women working, was fascinating. And it said, how to open and maintain a conversation.
Oh, I want to hear.
Yes. Start with the ideal woman. I have to get my voice. Then move on to the bimbo, the nymphomaniac, the mistress, the slave, the transvestite, the lesbian, the foreigner, the virgin. If the caller wants someone else, don't be insulted. Just be someone else.
That's smart.
I'm going.
Yeah.
To start a conversation, ask, what's on your mind? What would you like to talk about? Never initiate sex. Let the client do that. To keep them interested, tell a fantasy. Wild one, preferably. That should include... honey, jello, travel, ice cream, lesbian love, orgies, and so on. If the conversation remains clean, tell a story about movies, books, and all sorts of things. Insist that it's a true story. Be professional. Don't speak to anyone else other than the caller. What do you think? I thought it was just what I find interesting is that I don't know, the transvestite comes before the virgin or the foreigner. It's kind of, but okay, if that's the fantasy. But the idea is really, you know, again, going back to the ideal woman. I mean, everything that was detailed in this manual is kind of so stereotyped, and so, you know, include this, include that, orgies, lesbian sex, I don't know, jello.
it's not as fun as it looks. Just kidding.
yeah, it's not as, and there's a lot of cleanup.
Yes.
But so the whole idea of using women's language or, you know, terminology to turn you on as a selling, you know, edge was actually analyzed very intensely by many people in this industry. And Robin Lakoff is a big researcher that said that she came up with the dominance approach. And she said that, among other things, of course, phone sex as well, but in general, women's speech is representative of powerlessness. That everything that women say, the way they use questions, tag questions, the way they use specific words like, oh, wonderful, beautiful, the way they try to so or that, or, you know, like use connecting words that are giving you a bigger admiration or other relation to speech, were really kind of affirming female powerlessness. What do you think? Do you think it's true? I mean, that's what actually is so sellable about phone sex as a fantasy? The women are presenting themselves as powerless?
Yes. yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you're basically at the... I mean, it's just like any other sort of exchange for sex or sexual performance or arousal. You know, you're there for service. Like, okay. You're there at that man's service. Whether you're taking off your clothes in front of him with a stripper pole.
Right.
Or you're having sex with him, or you're trying to excite him with your language. Like, you're basically there at their service to do.
So what men are seeking is powerless?
Is power?
Is powerless women?
I think that's the element that takes place societally.
Okay.
But I think that what actually turns a person on varies. And like whether you're on the phone and you're being like, I need you to take off your pants right now. And then I want
whether you're being dominant or.
Yeah. I mean, that's like that part isn't the, like there's the societal aspect of what's actually occurring, the process. And then there's the actual fantasy part. And I don't think that men are consciously seeking that, like, powerlessness of the woman.
No.
I don't think they're necessarily consciously seeking it. But I think unconsciously they probably, like, it sounds, you know, that's what they're doing. Because they have to pay in order for this to occur. You know, because...
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, because obviously they don't have somebody to do it.
Money is a big part of it, yeah. Of course.
So you're buying something.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
a product.
You're buying the product. But if it's somebody that you, like, if it's outside of that, you know, monetary exchange, then it's a totally different element completely. And so I think that comparing phone sex that you pay for to phone sex that occurs within a romantic relationship or
a
dating relationship, you can't do that. And I think that the elements that are going on there, like what is turning the person on, isn't necessarily that they're paying for it. It's what the person's saying, which could be a myriad of things.
Right.
You know, and...
But they're both fantasies.
Yes.
Whether you pay for it or not.
Yes.
I mean, you create a fantasy while talking, you know, dirty talking on the phone or, you know, selling something like that. So, yeah, I mean, we still haven't touched the idea of what do men, you know, how do men differ from women when it comes to fantasies. And so a bunch of course, studies related to what do men fantasize about, what do women fantasize about. You want to give it a shot?
Oh, God.
Men are very simple.
Yeah. As far as I know, they really like to fantasize about, like you said, the ideal woman that they're having sex with or okay. their partner. I think when people are in relationships, when they're like in the like exciting part, they're kind of still envisioning their partner for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think it just goes into like multiple people and.
Multiple partners?
Yeah, multiple partners.
Okay.
And outfits and situations and
and women.
And women.
What do you think women fantasize about?
Well, there's
I'll,
the
of
whole...
course, give you everything, all the scientific part of it.
Yeah. You know, I think it's the, like you said, the desire. Being so desirable that a man can't control himself.
Around. He just has to have you.
He just has to have you right now.
I know.
I can't wait. I mean... Yeah.
Like body heat. Like, let me break the door open so I can just take you.
Exactly.
But another question that I want to refer to and ask you what you think, just out of whatever comes to mind. When do you think women versus men, when do they fantasize? During masturbation, intercourse, both? What do you think? When is it taking place?
I know. I'm like, from personal experience.
Yes, please.
Like, depending on the partner. Sometimes it's like, I'm like, be anybody but who you are.
Oy. That sounds really bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're.
I'm a dry desert, right?
I'm like, be anybody else. Wait, you know, but you've been with someone for a long time. It's like, you're like been doing the same thing over and over again. You're like, oh my God. You're like, please just make it stop. You know, it's like, oh, it's Wednesday night. You know what that means.
It's time for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so studies show that approximately 95% of society fantasizes. Men tend to do it more often in relation to any situation. And that means that they can see a hot woman on the street and they can fantasize. Women tend to do that less, not as common.
Mm-hmm.
Both sexes used fantasy while having intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to masturbation, mostly men had more to do with fantasy, even though I don't necessarily agree, but this is what scientifically...
What people report.
I don't know. You know, I tend to disagree with the part about masturbation because I think it's a big part for, it's a big chunk of fantasy being taking place there for women, in my opinion, both personal and professional.
It's like, whoa. I have a whole exciting life when I'm double clicking my mouse.
Yes, please let me just go through my Rolodex here.
I'm like, my spank bang. Here we go.
Let me see what I'm looking at. Yes. But, and then when it came to, I'm going to go over the themes that are actually the main themes for fantasy for both sexes. But what men were mainly fantasizing about was group sex and anonymous partners. Someone that you don't necessarily know, but as we said, depicts the ideal partner. And group sex was a main thing. I mean, most of them reported that they would like to be
with multiple
in a harem
men.
Of no.
Well, I mean, like, because sometimes that's also one of the fantasies.
Well, yeah, you know, a few men having sex with one woman was also a part of it. But most of them preferred to have some lesbian action going on in their presence.
Like, and they could handle more than one woman.
Yeah,
Let's be real. Some of them
cannot even handle one, but okay. Depends who that one is.
Yes.
But, yeah, so group sex in general was a main thing with men. And with women, I find it interesting and kind of intriguing. The two things that were more appealing were, one, sex with famous people. A very interesting thing. Yeah. Yeah, oh. Sex with famous people. They just, you know, picked, oh, this celebrity, he's on my bucket list. I want to have sex with him. You know, that would be my main fantasy. I would fantasize about, I don't know, who's hot.
I don't know. I love John Hamm, Alexander Skarsgård, Joe Manganiello.
These people.
I'm like, okay. Well, do we need more?
So John Hamm.
Okay.
Yeah, him I know. The others I didn't know. I'm sorry. I'm like, I'm living in LA. But okay. So John Hamm, fantasizing about him. Okay. So like, it had to do with a certain maybe character in a movie or someone specifically, just, you know, features or whatever. So that was a main thing, which wasn't that common with men, that I find interesting.
I mean,
they weren't
odd.
Fantasizing about, yeah. They were fantasizing about anonymous women, but not necessarily about Megan Fox. I don't know. Like,
interesting.
Yeah. So women did report that they were fantasizing about famous partners, and the other main thing was same-sex...
Lesbian
sex, yeah. What do you think? Does that make sense?
Well, it's kind of like these taboos that people... That's one of the great things about fantasies. You don't actually have to do them. They don't ever have to actually be possible.
So you think it's because of some social taboo about...
Sure, I mean, that makes it a little more exciting. I think that they're...
That's the source of that fantasy with women, do you think?
Well, I also just think that the female body is much more attractive than the male body.
Let's just be real. That's a given. Yeah. Yes. But, okay.
Like, let's just be real.
Let's just be real.
Yeah. Let's just keep it...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's but, a lot... You know, it is... I mean, there's something very erotic about the female body with its, you know, more rounded texture and, like, the curves.
The flow is by far better.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's more like water.
Yes.
And...
Yes.
Men's bodies are like, hopefully, rocks.
hopefully,
it's just nice chiseledness and rough
it's getting
edges.
Hot.
And, yeah.
Yes, rough edges. And, okay. So,
Rock hard.
I want to refer to, because I find it interesting, and as a woman and as someone that is involved in mental health and, you know, likes to analyze this whole situation, I find it very interesting. And I went and checked, and there are many sources that regard to female sexuality in terms of same sex or the opposite sex. And I did find a massive source of same sex interest in women, especially by a very remarkable theorist called Lisa Diamond. And she wrote a book called Sexual Fluidity, which you probably
heard of. No, well, that's actually my theory of sexuality. So
okay.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah. So women are, and I agree with everything she writes there, women are, I'm not going to go into it because I want us to have a show about female desire.
Yes.
In general, because it's so vast and there's so much to say. But... So female sexuality is fluid, meaning that, yes, we are born with an orientation. I don't want to go through the whole thing. I'll just touch that subject, that women, and that's why every heterosexual porn movie has a lesbian scene and not a gay scene, because sexual relations between women are not only appealing to men, but to women. Because women find other women attractive, most of them will not, you know, attest to it. But unfortunately, because it's a very normal and functional part of female sexuality. And so because it's fluid, women sometimes are very confused about it, but they don't really know what to make of it, that all of a sudden, you know, they are heterosexual, they love dick. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, the next door neighbor is like, ooh. She's hot. You know,
I like
would
that.
Yeah, I would invite her in. Mm-hmm. So, and you don't know what to do with that information. You know, it registers that you're aroused, but you don't know what to do with it. It's kind of weird. So let me just calm everybody down and say that female sexuality is fluid, and that makes sense, and the whole thing. So that fantasy about being with another woman is a very common...
Natural.
Very natural, very common thing with women. And a very big theme when it comes to female fantasy. So there were four themes that were main when it comes to both sexes. One was imagery of having sex with the ex or someone that you fantasize about or imaginary. Like not even anybody, let's just say, and I'll, in a few minutes I'll get to the whole romance novel, which is, but let's just say that I'm fantasizing about Christian Grey. Okay, so I'm thinking in my head that he looks like John Hamm, and you know, and then we'll have wild sex in his dungeon or something. Okay, so that's the image, that's the imaginary partner that I'm thinking about. Both men and women do that when it comes to that. The second preferred theme was sexual power and irresistibility. So again, we're going back to the whole idea that I'm irresistible and men are just attacking me with their penises.
They just can't get enough. It's just so
come
much.
At me. I don't know what to do. I know. It's like insane. So that was the second theme. The third one was different positions or different locations, as you said, or, you know, settings, different settings.
Different settings.
You know, it could
like,
be
ooh.
on the table.
Cabana.
Cabana. On, you know... On
a hot tub,
right next
on
to a
beach,
pool, on the beach, on a banana leaf.
Yeah,
all of that applies.
On a boat.
On like, a boat.
On a, would you? Could you? On a boat? Would you?
I don't know. I'm getting seasick. Just am I facing the ocean? I'm like, you know, it's like traveling against the direction of. Yeah, it's yeah, and the last one was about being either submissive or dominant, which I find very interesting. And I think that, to me, it's one of the main themes when it comes to both sexes. The dominant versus submissive theme is a big, big one. More to me than the position or settings.
Well, I think they kind of go intertwined a lot of times.
That's
like,
true.
The whole like setting of the office, right?
Yes,
you're doing it at the office.
Okay.
You call in, your
the
boss
secretary.
Calls you in, your secretary calls you in, a
and
colleague
you go,
calls you,
go.
You in.
What did you want?
Yeah.
Let me just take notes.
Do I need to work late today? You know?
I thought you were going to say, do I need to wear latex?
Oh.
It sounded like.
I know. That's where, that's next.
That's the second.
That's the next one. With the,
I know.
With the whips and chains.
Yeah. So that was, very interesting. I mean, the submissive or the dominant part was very common, and I find it very relevant and very true, indeed. But I want to get to the romance novel. And no judgment, no names named. I said the name of the character, but I don't want to refer to a specific novel. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. And I'm not a big fan of romance novels. I find them, but I want to ask you, what do you think? Why is that such a phenomenon? I mean, is that really what women fantasize about?
These long, drawn-out romances? I feel like
no,
it's like...
No, the idea of it, I mean, not the novel itself, but there's a reason why it's selling, like, cult-wise.
Oh, do you mean the submissive dominant theme in the romance
novel? I'm talking about the whole idea of the romance novel in general.
Oh, well, I think it's safe porn.
Wait, like what does that mean?
Like, you can walk outside, there's
and
a picture,
read it,
and you don't have to worry
not
about...
Not be judged.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the judgment. Like, if you walk outside with a hustler, everyone's like, oh.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, exactly.
With hustler.
I mean...
Especially hustler.
Yes. It is very exciting.
Yes.
Not and much to the imagination.
Yeah, no. Everything is out in the open. So you think it's just safe porn?
Yeah, I think it's just safe porn. I think that's why women, a lot of women have a lot of insecurities about exploring pornography in general. And they feel like, oh, it's just, it's awful. I mean, there's...
So I can get wet in my living room or at the pool reading that specific novel that we're not naming and getting aroused without admitting that I want a tall, dark stranger touching my vagina.
Handcuffing me down at the bed and doing all sorts of
face things. Fucking me.
Exactly. Ooh, or titty fucking me.
Titty.
Yeah.
Okay, so I agree with everything you said, but I and there's an additional side to it which I really tend to agree with. So Tanya Modleski wrote a book called Loving with a Vengeance, and she really analyzes the whole idea of mass fantasies and how they are sold to women. And there's something very interesting, because I'm sure you're familiar with the Harlequin romance novels from the 50s.
Actually, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah. So that was the founding father of all the rest and the ones that we're not naming right now. Right. But in general, here's the theme of the Harlequin romance novels. And you'll tell me if it sounds like down to the last detail. So... A poor to moderate, you know, status woman, young, inexperienced, beautiful, falls for this wealthy, strong, handsome bastard. Now, she's smitten with him, but she's really uncomfortable with his behavior because she doesn't know. I mean, he's sending different messages. On one hand, he's obviously interested, but then he's kind of brutal and not attentive and maybe... you know, a little insulting and maybe, you know, even forceful in a way. Eventually, you know, of course, he just comes out with his love to her and everything ends up in a lovely fuck bow and, you know, a traditional, you know, Asian massage, you know, happy ending kind of thing with the climax erupting all over the heroine's tits.
Okay,
so... In general, does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay, down to the last detail, yes. Right? So the thing is, really, this is how the Harlequin novels were written. And nothing really changed. I mean, women are consuming this genre, which is specifically exactly the same story. Only the names change. But the same story is being marketed to women since the 50s. Mm-hmm. And I find it very interesting because... Is it really, does that have to do with the fact that they can masturbate quietly or get aroused without admitting to watching porn? Or is there something more to it? And the analysis says that there is something more to it. And I tend to agree. And what Modleski in her book says is that women find it, you know, the idea of that they can be that woman that is being taken care of and being, you know, the little demure thing that is being taken and possessed.
Educated.
is something that really, and again, that this whole, and she relates to a commercial that was done back in the, I guess, 70s for these Harlequin novels. And that commercial was, had a woman lying on a bed, reading that novel and talking to the camera and saying, I'm ready to go into my disappearing act. Yeah, something very seductive. So the disappearing act is actually this escapism that women go into. But do they do this only with romance novels and as a fantasy? Or really in real life, they're trying to go into this selflessness. I mean, this position of being selfless, that is what these novels are selling. This is the message that novels are selling to women. And actually, you know, the whole idea of self-subversion and surrender is the main thing with these novels. And is that really the female fantasy? Women want to be controlled and possessed and subservient and... all of the above?
Sexually? That they want to be...
Sexually? Well, the sex is a big part of these romance novels, yeah. As we know. But in general, is that like a secret fantasy? Is that something that, because of female power we cannot admit anymore, but these novels are selling like
hotcakes.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't even know. Like, it's kind of weird to me to think that, you know, the submissive role is something that women would fantasize about, but then it's also kind of perpetuated in different areas that women are subservient, and that's what makes her desirable, is this kind of like...
To men.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like that's marketed to women from an early age. That okay. they're the
that they
damsel in distress type of thing.
That you should be subservient because then men will want you.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it comes back to this whole thing of wanting to be wanted. You know, the whole desire aspect where it's like, they want to be wanted and they want to do it at whatever cost possible, even if it's at the expense of themselves.
Okay, so that's where it comes from.
That's what I think. I mean, based on some of the stuff that, you know, just putting it together, like listening to all of it and thinking about it, I think a lot of women want to be, like we said, desired and wanted and just unbridled passion for somebody, you know?
Let me just tear you to shreds. Okay, so Susan Brownmiller wrote in her book, Against Our Will, which was released in 75. It's an old book, but she said that, and I want to get to a very strong subject when it comes to fantasies. She had a theory called the reflection theory, and she said that women have no fantasies of their own, that they're all male-fed fantasies, and in specific, she related to rape fantasies. Hmm. And she said that when women are said to experience rape fantasies, they are actually being fed these fantasies by men that are fantasizing about raping women or being, you know, dominant or taking women. And that's where it comes from. That has nothing to do with actually with women's minds of their own, but actually something that is perpetuated by the male counterparts. What do you think?
I mean, it's kind of one of those things that's kind of hard to separate out. Like, where are all of our thoughts coming from? And
what do you think about the whole... But let's go to the rape fantasy, because to me, it's a big, big chunk of the fantasy world.
Oh,
it is. Do women fantasize about being raped?
Yes. I think that's one of the top fantasies, actually, based on things that women report, is that they call the force fantasy.
Right.
It's like maybe being coerced into some sort of lack of control. Maybe not necessarily, maybe not necessarily being raped.
Per se,
but just being taken.
Okay.
And again, consumed, like that your partner's consumed with desire and they can't handle not being able to have you at the moment that they want you. And I think it's a very common fantasy and, I don't think that we should judge our fantasies too much, because sometimes people...
No, judge not at all. I mean, it's whatever we fantasize about is by all means acceptable.
Yeah.
And should never be judged. What I'm interested in is trying to understand, do women actually indulge in these forceful fantasies, or are we being fed as women by you know, the patriarchal society or whatever? As to what we're supposed to fantasize about, and then it grows into believing that it's our own fantasies or not. I mean, that's a question.
That's also a thing that's hard to kind of dissect in general. Like, where would you get topics for fantasies unless it's from the world around us?
Right, but in specific, the rape fantasy, here's what I think, and a lot of studies support that. But I do think that a bunch of them, first of all, American women in specific, are twice as likely than men and other women in other societies to fantasize about being done to than to do. Being done to. I mean, that's how the term came to mind. And what they, the researchers found is that women are... actually indeed fantasize about the rape fantasy or the forceful fantasy very commonly, like down to numbers of like once a week, women reported having forceful fantasies. And with the women reporting them, 62% reported to have no, you know, aversive side to these fantasies. I mean, they were by all means something that they were interested in. Mm-hmm. The researchers also went and examined whether these women had any experience with coercion or, you know, being attacked as younger women, or, you know, just dragged into forceful sex in any way. None of these factors actually showed any significance in terms of the results. So I do find, and of course, as I said, the theorists are very very ambivalent about it, because some actually say, and mostly feminists, say that it's not true, that it's actually the, you know, males are feeding us these fantasies. And I say it's not true. I say women do fantasize about being taken or forcefully. And the main reason would be because rape fantasies really remove guilt. And to me, that's the main part about fantasies, especially to women. And this is where I'm going back to the romance novel. You don't feel guilty if you are being taken. You don't feel guilty if you read about being taken.
Yeah.
And that's like a common thing, a common theme in these books and in these fantasies, where women just feel more comfortable being in the position of being taken.
Yeah.
But
and usually in these fantasies too, it's like somehow you're getting pleasure out of this whole thing. It's like, I just
I
really just need to pleasure you right now. Like, let me just go to town. Let me just go down at the Y for
go to town.
Let me just down at the Y for the next hour and a half. It's like, you know,
okay,
that's,
just stay down there. Okay, yeah. I agree. I mean, that is very true. And in relation to that, Maslow actually put it into a very interesting, he divided these women with their preferred fantasies into a few, three groups actually. And he said that women that are endowed with high self-esteem usually sought to be dominated, which is interesting. I mean, if you have high self-esteem, You're not interested in taking charge, but you are interested in being taken.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting idea. He said that mid self-esteem women that were not like in the middle, were fantasizing about being seduced. And that actually women that had very low self-esteem had a very big tendency towards sadomasochistic fantasies.
That's so interesting.
Isn't that?
How do they separate the low self-esteem and high self-esteem with?
Well, I guess questionnaires about other aspects of your life and in terms of...
No, but I mean, how did they separate the sadomasochism desire from the force desire?
Oh, well, most of them fantasize about, you know, tying someone and gagging them.
Oh. So okay. Actual restraints.
Actual, yeah. And that is interesting, because in real life, if you are a little less confident, it seems, you would fantasize about taking charge and tearing apart someone else, which right. I find fascinating.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and also when we, there are a few other theorists that related to other aspects of sexuality, but... what do you think? Do you think that women are feeling guilty over fantasizing? And does guilt play a factor with fantasy?
I think it does. And I think it's interesting, because I don't think a lot of people share their fantasies with their partner because they're afraid of being judged, because they feel guilty for doing it, because they feel like it's abnormal to be fantasizing when you're having sex with somebody else.
What does that mean?
When you're having sex with somebody else?
No. What do you mean? When you have a partner, you should be guilty if you fantasize?
No. I think a lot of women feel guilty.
Fantasy, there's someone else.
I think even just that they're
fantasizing. Oh, I'm trying to understand what you mean.
No. Just even that they're fantasizing. Like, in
per
general.
Se.
Yeah.
Okay.
That they, you know, there's this, like, misconception that you're, that if you have a partner or the person that you're with at that time, mm-hmm. is your end all and be all of your sexuality. It's like, yeah, no.
Like, so you know, what, there's exclusivity when it comes to your mind?
But I think that some people think, and I think a lot of people do think that. And I think it's a little bit of a insecurity that men and women have, that their partner could fantasize about another person and leave for this fantasized person.
But it's imaginary.
It's imaginary. It's like an imaginary thought in my head. But I do think, like, I mean, the way I see it, it seems like it's an imaginary thought. But, you know, I do think that fantasies, women do feel a lot of guilt about fantasizing. But again, it goes into that whole, like, we shouldn't be having sex. Sex is bad. Sex is dirty. Like, good girls don't do that, you know, type of things like that. Good girls don't masturbate. Good girls don't have sex.
Don't fantasize.
Yeah, they don't fantasize. They just have sex to procreate, and their partner brings them their whole fulfillment. And that kind of goes into the whole, like, weird, sick, dysfunctional thing that we're fed by society, that women are there to be used by men. And that's, you know, a woman's...
In this day and age, do you think it's still...
Yeah. I mean, look at the wedding industry. Don't even get me started. I think that puts our society back a lot at how much effort and, like, money is put into this industry to kind of be claimed by a man, to have your name taken from you, you know, to be...
The women actually, are interested in that. That's something they aspire to.
It is. It is something women aspire to, like, to be Mrs.
That's a cultural
blah,
thing.
Blah, blah.
That's definitely a cultural thing.
And I think that it kind of feeds into this whole guilt women have about being, you know, this whole, like, ownership type of thing that's going on. You know, being Mrs. Smith is my ultimate goal.
Like, my God, if, you know, I can get his name on my mailbox, my climax will never be the same.
Yeah.
That is just an awful thought.
Well, but it's
again,
you know, it goes on, and I think a lot of the wedding industry, like these bridezilla things, these all of that stuff, it's this fantasy that I have achieved something because a man will let me take his name. You've achieved nothing, girlfriend.
That is very sad and bad.
Girl, you have ruined my high. That was a huge boner killer.
Give me some hot men around here now, right now. Okay, so the thing is, a lot of studies show that women that suffer from guilt when it comes to anything sexual will be a much smaller fantasizer. I mean, most of them will not allow their mind to go where their bodies are not, you know, allowed in. So, and it's a big, big thing that women are not allowing themselves. It was, of course, more common with women, but men, you know, reported feeling guilty about fantasizing as well, and in some couples, actually fantasizing about someone else, even imaginary, was considered cheating. And that's another thing that I wanted to hear your opinion about.
Well, we don't have a ton of time.
No, we have just a few minutes.
Yes. But fantasizing about somebody other than the person you're having sex with?
Is it cheating?
No.
Do you think people think it's cheating?
I think some people think it's cheating. But I mean, again, like, all of it goes on in the relationship. It's like you have to negotiate it. Like, if the person...
You have to negotiate? If my mind is going
to
actually
you have to negotiate. No, you have to negotiate and talk about it. And I think that's the problem. People don't talk about the fact that they're uncomfortable and explore what that discomfort is coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, is it an insecurity? Did my partner cheat on me? And now I'm concerned every time they're having, you know, every time there's a fantasy about somebody else, if that's the person.
Oh, okay. So if something preceded,
that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to go in yourself, figure out what it is about this person fantasizing about somebody else or being turned on by somebody else that is affecting you so much and having you have that reaction, or that you are feeling so insecure that you don't want them to fantasize. Because really, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter where you get your appetite as long as you come home for dinner. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah, just come and eat.
Yeah.
Come and feast. Well, the thing is, I, of course, think it's preposterous to think that if you fantasize, you're cheating. I mean, it's pathetic by all means. But I do think that, you were talking about actually cheating in reality, and then, you know, that precedes, you know, admitting that you fantasized about someone else, and that could create a whole situation.
Yeah, ton of crap.
Okay, yeah, ton of crap, in other words. But the thing is, really, I think some things should be kept for as a fantasy.
Oh.
Some things should be shared. The main thing, in my opinion, is whatever makes you tick and whatever keeps you hot and bothered has a place in your bedroom, on your couch,
exactly.
On your table, under the table, everywhere possible.
Wherever you're backseat of the car.
Just go
like,
fuck away as much as possible. And we're going to wrap it up.
Yep.
Okay. So we're inviting you to write us and call us and, you know, stalk us, lock us in the trunk of your car.
You
any
can
communication.
Fantasize about us as well.
You can fantasize about us being locked there.
Do not hang out. I'm like, oh.
Just, you know, throw a vibrator in
there. Throw a vibrator.
Keep us entertained. But truly send us your inquiries. We'll be happy to relate to them. And next show, we have a show about relationships. So we'll work. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. We're going to have a guest. And we're inviting you to send us your questions. If you have any questions about relationships or your lives are just perfect.
Yeah. Or types of relationships. Or you do want to share your fantasy with us.
Yes, please.
If you'd like me to read your fantasy online, please send it in.
And send your card.
Yeah, send your card with it.
So I truly enjoyed it.
Babe. Yes, me too.
Yeah. It was fun. And join us next time. I'm Dr. Limor Blockman.
And I'm Luann Hernandez.
Bye.
Bye.